Welcome to NextUS 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Doc JC. The inaugural season of NextUS 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all African American, all female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. I am pleased to welcome to episode 11, the descendants of Private Hester Givens Massey, who served in the 6888. My guests tonight are Tremika Massey and Kyra Massey Kennedy, granddaughters of Hester Givens Massey. Welcome, Tremika and Kyra.
Welcome. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
I'd like to start with a few interesting facts. First, Hester, her brother, and cousin were all in the service at the same time during World War II. Her brother was in the famed Red Bull Express, and her cousin was a Tuskegee Airman. Second, you have two Congressional Gold Medal recipients in your family, your grandmother Hester and your cousin Givens. And third, Florida A&M is a family tradition for the Masseys. And we're going to talk a bit more about that shortly. But let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about Hester. She was born in Cuthbert, Georgia. And where is that? What part of Georgia is that in? Do you know?
I think that's South Georgia.
South Georgia?
Yes. Yeah, right around. I think it's around one of the borders. It's like kind of a bordering kind of town.
Yeah, my mother was born in Owsley, Georgia, down on the border.
Well, I wonder how close they are. We have to look into that.
Probably. I keep running into a lot of the soldiers who were born in Georgia.
And, mm-hmm. So hey, cousin Doc.
It was good Georgia roots, eh?
That's right.
She was born in Cuthbert, but grew up in Linden, New Jersey, and enlisted in Newark. So how old was she when she enlisted?
18.
Okay.
And so she was right out of high school at the time?
Yes, right out of high school.
So how did her parents react when she decided to enlist?
Well, I mean, because since her older brother had already went and the cousin had already went, from what we've heard, you know, they were supportive. And I think she was already strong-willed already. So, you know, we don't know because they didn't tell us and she's not here, but, you know, she might have just went and did it. I would see, Kyra, wouldn't you see Grandma, like, just going up there and coming back and telling them about it after the fact?
I mean, Tremika and I, but we're a military family, so it was just basically tradition to serve the country.
Yeah.
She just stepped up and did it.
Okay, yeah. So she have any sense of, so that's why you think she decided, because it was unusual for a woman to decide to enlist in the Army.
Yeah.
So did you have any sense of why she chose that versus some other option? Or the options were limited for women at that time.
Well, I know I'm saying that the military is important because my dad was in Vietnam. So I just know that it's just a family tradition to serve the country, not, I guess, follow along her brother's footsteps. You know, siblings always kind of follow their siblings. So, but, mm-hmm. but yeah, military is very important in our family, even though I didn't go in the military and Tremika didn't either. But for them, it was.
Okay.
And I know a cousin mentioned to us that she had joined, I think it was a smaller, he said Waves, but I hadn't heard of that.
I think the Waves were a female unit associated with the Navy, but I don't know that African-American women were in that group at that time.
Right. Yeah. So that's I hadn't heard that, but I know he made it seem like it was something else that she was doing that was kind of a military focus that she could do at the time. So when the opportunity came up, for her to be, because she's part of the first group that went over. So some kind of way, when she found out that she could, she took the opportunity. And it could definitely have been that Uncle Howard had heard rumblings about it and, you know, kind of presented it to her.
So I'm interested in any stories that she shared about her time in the service, any adventures, painful, scary, or funny memories?
Well, go ahead, Kyra.
I'm glad you were, I was saying in the military. Go ahead, Jermaine.
No, I was just going to say that, like, for me, I didn't find out that she, and it's, and I'm younger, right? So I hadn't found out that she was like in the military and that she actually had this, right? Actually my maternal, cause this is on my father's side, but my maternal aunt, after my grandmother had passed away, was like, oh my gosh, she's like a historic figure. And she started, you know, telling me kind of the stories that she had heard from my grandmother from one of the gatherings that we had at our house. And she was just saying how they went there. She said how they did all the mail. They were so efficient that they sent them there. And a lot of people didn't know that there were African-Americans there on D-Day. And she was there. And, you know, that she was just, you know, really proud. But I didn't hear those stories. Kyra, I don't know about you at the time. I didn't hear any of those stories firsthand, you know, at all.
I didn't know about it till I read her obituary. Honestly, I didn't know. And then I started hearing, I was like, well, I said, yeah, I've heard about those. I'm like, oh my God, my grandmother was one of the first 50. I'm like, oh my gosh. And my dad did tell me some stories, but at the time when I was like younger, you know, my twins, like, okay, I didn't realize the significance of it until after thinking about, you know, hearing about it, hearing how important it was. And then the first Black 50, women to get into the army, then I realized it was a big deal. But when I heard about it from my dad, I had a few stories about it, but didn't really know how important it was.
Okay.
In terms of.
So, Tamika, you indicated that Hester met someone quite special when she was in France. You want to talk about that?
Well, and right. And so then, right. Okay. So for, and Kyra, you can, me and Kyra hadn't talked about this part, but all I ever heard about our grandfather, because he had passed by the time me and Kyra were here, he passed when my father was 10, my dad's Samuel Martin Massey III. So I knew that his father was Samuel Martin Massey Jr. or the second, right? And all we had was a picture, a marriage picture of him in uniform. So I knew he was in the military. Didn't know that my grandmother was in the military, but I knew he was in the military. And so when I got the military records and started asking the family about, okay, so what did you know about my grandfather? And they were like, oh yeah, they met in the war. And I'm like, so wait. Because all I ever heard, and Kyra, you can echo if you heard the same. All I ever heard was that our grandfather was shot and killed at a poker game.
Yep. That's it.
That was the story. You asked about Grandpa Sam. He was shot and killed at a poker game.
Yep.
And I know
you have to tell us about that, but not till you have to tell me about how they met.
Yeah. So we never heard the story. We just heard that he came in, he flew in for the wedding, and then he left back out, and that they met in the military. Right. And in between this time, Kyra's dad was born. A couple years later, my daddy was born, named after him. So it was just kind of like, okay. But when I got both of their records, right, from the Veterans Affairs, and I compared them, I was able to see where they were both there together at the same time. That's where their paperwork intersected. And later on, there was a man who was in his battalion, Mr. Lionel Young, that I found that was still living. I found his son, and he was from the same area that my grandfather was from. So I had talked to him, showed him the pictures, and he basically told me that, yep, he remembers them. He remembers them meeting. He remembers whenever he met my grandmother there. I guess they used to kind of conjugate together or go somewhere for like drinks or something like that. And so they met each other. They would see there, and he was like, yeah, I remember. So that was kind of the story that I kind of had about that. But all the while growing up, had no clue.
So they met in France.
When she was in France. Yep, because he was in Normandy. He was in charge of bringing the artillery from the ship over to the beaches. Okay. That was his role. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, me and Kyra wouldn't be talking to you right now if that little bold lady. And oh, by the way, another interesting fact about my grandmother. I don't know if she grew a couple inches, but my grandmother was all of 5 feet only.
Yes.
All of 5 feet only. Because I think our cousin said that, like, she was only like the second. It was only like one person shorter than her, and that she was happy that she made the cut based upon her height.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. she just made the cut. So whatever that was back then, I don't know if it was surely 5 feet or 4'11", but yeah, she was a little short. She was short. She was funky.
So we have to know about the poker game.
Yeah. So listen, I know everybody won't be able to see this, but I'm gonna do this for your benefit. So here is all of his medals, right? And I'm gonna say, here's all of his medals. Okay. This man kept re-enlisting. He has a rifle thing, re-enlisting. Continue to re-enlist every time. Every time you see he comes out, re-enlist, right?
But can you tell us what those medals are?
Yes. So he has the rifle medal. He has the European, African, Middle Eastern campaign, the Korean medal. And oh, by the way, he has 2 stars and it's like an arrow that's on the European one. So he has those on there. So he was doing some great things. And this is where me just being a civilian, right? Someone else can talk better about these. But he has the Korean medal, and then he has the Korean service medal, which has 2 stars on it. He has the Japan Army of Occupation Award. He has this says Fidelity Efficiency Honor Award, the World War II medal, the American Campaign medal, and the National Defense.
Impressive.
Yeah. And so this man that did all of that, even came back home, created children, and was sending everything back home, decided to head to Chicago area after he came back, and was a boarder at a house with a lady, and they were apparently playing cards, and somebody got a little bit upset, and she hit him over the head with a beer bottle, and then she went and got her gun and shot him straight in his chest.
My goodness.
Over cards.
Mm-hmm.
They have an article in the newspaper about it. That's kind of how we got the details, you know, and read about that. So I kind of just started searching for, because I'm like, surely, you know, this got some sort of attention. And I dug through the Gary, Indiana. So I think he had just crossed over the line from Chicago over into Gary, Indiana. Yeah. But it happened in Gary, Indiana.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, he dodged all of them bullets. Only to be there, right? So I'm sure my grandmother had another thing, and my father, our fathers, they didn't go to the funeral, you know. So I know that's the thing for my dad still, right? That he didn't get to say that final goodbye that way, and I'm sure that was a complicated being a parent. Now I completely understand that, and you know that that's just a hard thing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to say our fathers, my father was 10, so Kyra, Uncle Eddie must have been like 12 or so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your grandmother. What did she do when she completed her military service?
So she went to Seton Hall and became a nurse, was a beautician and a seamstress, and stayed in the Elizabeth area, settled in Roselle. That's where the family home was. Yeah.
Did she take advantage of the GI Bill? Do you know if she took advantage of the GI Bill? And if so, how did she use it?
Yeah, I would think, now this is an assumption, but I'm sure that she probably did. That's how she would have gotten to Seton Hall, because there's not a lot of our family members that I know of that went to college at the time and got, you know what I'm saying? So I would think that she would have used those services to do that, but that is definitely a point for us to confirm, because I'm sure that's documented somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you recall any lessons that she learned through her service, in the time in the service, she passed on to the family? Any values or traditions that she passed on as a consequence?
Like I said, the military, because like I said, my dad went to Vietnam, and then from Vietnam, he went to FAMU, and that's where my mom and dad met. Okay. So, military was very important. Serving the country is very important. So yeah, my dad, seemed like he was fearless after coming from Vietnam, you know. So I guess he said, if my mom can do it, then you know, then I can too. So
Did any other children or grandchildren go into the service?
No, it's just me. She had those three sons. My father and her other son went to college, all went to HBCUs. And so my father went to Lamar first before Howard. And that's where he met my mom in Beaumont, Texas. And then the younger brother went to Tuskegee. So they all just went through college and got educated that way. And then, of all of that, she only had three grandchildren, me and Kyra and I, and then my younger brother, that's Samuel Martin Massey IV. And all of us went to college. All of us did some time at FAMU. My brother graduated from Tuskegee, but Kyra and I both graduated from FAMU. So my brother was there for a stint, and then, you know, he's the only boy, so he got to be different.
Well, my dad, when he was at FAMU, joined a program with University of Florida as a part of the SBI, well, School of Business program. So he did a semester at University of Florida and was, his line was responsible for having the first Black Greek organization on the University of Florida campus. And I believe it was this past summer or summer 2021, the president honored my father and his line brothers for having the first Black Greek organization back in 71. But that also led to the other Divine Nine come on the campus. Yep. So that was pretty big. And then he transferred back to FAMU and graduated from there.
Okay, so which Greek organization was he in?
He's a Kappa. He's a charter member.
Yeah, he's a Kappa man through and through.
And then Tramika's dad is
a life member. And my dad was on the second line at Lamar University. So his line was the second Omega line that was at Lamar University. Yep.
Okay.
Following in his brother's footsteps.
Any shout outs to any other Divine Nine while we're talking about Divine Nine?
Of course. The ladies of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated.
Right.
Made in the Beta Alpha chapter, which Kyra's mother is. Kyra's mother set that tradition for us.
Gotta get all the hashtags in there. You know how that is.
Get them all in.
Okay, so my mom pledged in 68 at FAMU, and then I pledged in 91 mm-hmm. in Tremeca.
Ninety-seven.
Well, this is a good segue because I was going to ask you to talk about your background and your family. Very clearly, higher education is highly valued in your family, and you attributed that to the influence of your grandmother. So, Tramika, let's start with you. You are a risk management professional at a Fortune 100 banking and finance organization. I understand you're also a music producer and singer. Want to tell me about your career and your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. At FAMU, my all of the brothers, like I said, they all went to HBCU. So when it came time for me to go, Kyra was already there working on her degree. You know, all of them were pulling. Right. And when my uncle found out that I wanted to be an accountant, he was like, there's no other place you can be other than FAMU. And, you know, you got to go there and be with Dean Mobley. You know, that was his professor at the time. And she is monumental for all of the, for her impact. She came out of Harvard, but she was our dean, and she actually placed so many of them. A lot of people who are in the C-suite right now that came out of FAMU come underneath her tutoring. But she ended up being a dean by the time I was there. And so he was like, nope, you got to be there. So of course my dad was there. My uncle was on by Tuskegee, but Uncle Eddie won. And it convinced me when I was a sophomore that I was going to be going to FAMU, majoring in business. And so I followed along and trusted him. And with Kyra there, having my big cousin there, you know, it just made it even better. And so I got my MBA, got my bachelor's degree there in accounting, and then stayed and got my master's in business administration, went to IBM. So I did a number of Fortune 500 companies, Medtronic, Valero, all in kind of audit. Internal audit type things. I actually met my husband at Florida A&M as well, and we had four kids there. My oldest was born in Tallahassee. She's now 22, And she graduated from North Carolina A&T just last year. So once again, HBCU education. She's a bioengineer, which, you know, Kyra lead into when you talk with her. So just following in the family tradition. And my second oldest will be graduating this year and plans to go to FAMU and major in marketing. The dean there now, Dr. Friday, was actually my professor there. So it really is kind of a whole tradition of there. So I told my daughter, you know, watch who your teachers are, because she might be the dean for your baby or for one of your nieces and nephews based on how this story is going. Right. But education is so important, you know, moving around for the family, you know, so just, you know, I know from me and Kyra being there, and even with my brother, like, we're hard workers. You put us in the room, we're going to stand fearlessly. We're under pressure. The level of calm that we're able to have to be able to do the things that we've done and break the barriers that we've broken, like, that's something that I would say with my dad, her dad, my brother, and us, and even our children. And I think it's just from the examples of, like, it's excellence. You're going to do this. You can do this. It's been done before. No one can take the education that you have. I know my grandmother made sure I had all of the childcraft books and encyclopedias that you had to offer. And I'm sure Kyra had a set there too for her. So she was huge about education and studying, and whatever goes into your mind, no one can take that from you. And so those are her values. You know, I know she would be so proud of us and our offspring. And I had four children, and wait till you hear about Kyra. So she started with just a few, but we have carried on the Massey name, even though it's just in blood.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. So, Kyra, I think she's doing the handoff to you. You are president of a foundation that facilitates growth in research, development, and scientific innovation. And I also understand that you're an inventor. So,
yes, I am.
So, tell me more.
Okay, so when I'm going to start. So at FAMU, I met my daughter's father. And as I was a career student, career student, because it took me 8 years to get my degree. I finally graduated with a BS degree in math and a minor in mechanical engineering. I swapped at the last minute because Hewlett Packard wanted me to, like, graduate immediately if I wanted the job. So I switched my major from mechanical engineering to math. So I was in engineering school and being a single mom in school. So I got a job at Hewlett Packard in Atlanta, was in IT, and then after, you know, downsizing and everything, I became an entrepreneur since 2002. But my background that interests me the most is STEM and engineering. So my dad really wanted a son, and so I'm the only child. So for Christmas, my mom would give me Barbie dolls, my dad would give me a football, he would give me a fire hydrant hat, he would give me anything that was a boy toy. He would not buy a girl toy. So my dad decided to buy an erector set. And so I took that erector set, was building things with screws and things. I made a car and put my Barbie on it. And ever since then, I've been dealing with anything mechanical, taking TVs apart. You know, like, my mother came on, like, oh my God, I put it back together. Things break down in the house, I can fix it. I've repaired a dryer, taking that apart. So STEM has always been really big. My internships were with a Ford Motor Company. I did like six internships before I graduated. And then in 98, I was in Fortune Magazine about being one of the top recruits from a major in engineering. And then that's how Hewlett Packard found out about me, and then moving forward. So moving forward, on a blind date, my cousin, not drinking with my other cousin from my mom's side, and a friend, introduced me to my husband, who I've been married to for 20 years now. And so I have four other children. So I have a total of five children, 28, 20, 16, 13, and 11. And I have a granddaughter that's six. So, yeah, education is very much important. My daughter actually went to FAMU. She did her stint there. She did a stint there and decided to go in a different direction in art. But yeah, education is very important. I don't think I'm going to have any engineers, but at least I tell them to follow their path. But just knowing that education is just a way to function in the world today. So I tell my kids they have to do something. If you don't have to do engineering, find something you love and still go to school. So yeah, and so with my foundation now, I want to teach other kids about STEM, just like how I started off in kindergarten messing with tools, that engineering is cool, engineering is fun. And if you're a girl, engineering is still cool. So that's what my foundation does. It promotes STEM to the community, and then I create devices. And so what I invented was, I invented a moisture pad that can detect any kind of moisture if someone's bedridden, so it can cure bed sores.
Wow.
And then within that patent, it's a Wi-Fi pillowcase that lets someone know if they have brain surgery that they're leaking from the brain. And what I'm most excited about, because I got three devices under one patent, but the last thing is a Wi-Fi vest that can locate soldiers if they're lost. All that is patented. And so I'm currently trying to work on that to get that under some kind of production. And then I'm a mom who's, you know, right now at a Girl Scout meeting. So I'm just, you know, I'm mom. I'm, at the end of the day, I'm just mom to my kids. Forget all that stuff, you know. So that is me.
Very, very impressive, ladies, both of you. Very, very impressive. Now, I'm going to ask you a minute about FAMU, but Tamika, you didn't talk about your career as a vocalist and producer. I think
I know because I get caught up into telling all everybody else's stories. You know, I have
Anime.
I know.
That's her line.
My line name is Anime. So my start of being a singer, as you can only imagine, definitely has its roots.
And Tina Turner?
Is that Anime that? Bullet. That's okay. Right. That's right. The original.
I got that.
Yes. So it's always I always just had the I love to entertain, I love to sing, love to dance, and
You have a little something for us?
Let's see. At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over, and life is a love song. At last.
All right.
We're on this podcast, so lovely to be here with you, Doc, and my cousin Kyra.
All right.
Yes. So I, you know, once again, just finding what you love, like Kyra says, like, you know, it's all been about education, but I think for both of our fathers, like, her dad was known to be DJ Cuz, you know, so it was always about music. You know, my father had a record collection beyond this world, and so did his brother. So it's always been about music as well. So listening to the headphones, being inspired by the old school music was always there for me. And so now when the world gets too heavy, you know, I have four children as well. I was a stay-at-home mom for a number of years. My refuge of finding peace in everything was in music. And I started writing some years ago. And in 2020, I put out my first EP. And I've been writing ever since. So I have music. I go under the name Trey Rochelle. And so I'm a mom. I work a corporate job, you know, and volunteer and do everything. And I have this whole other passion thing. So I think for us, it's education. But it's about having a good time, laughing, taking care of each other. It's always about family. Yeah, I mean, you gotta have a good time with life. And I think us seeing our grandparents and, you know, losing family members kind of early like that, I think that we've learned that you really have to cherish life. You really have to enjoy it. You really have to make your mark. I mean, like Kyra was in the magazine. I was in Ebony magazine. My dad was in Ebony. Like we, you know, in Jet magazine, like you make your mark and you remind people that you were here. And now with our grandmother, you know, getting a congressional medal, like that's where it all started.
So how did Florida A&M become a family tradition?
Well, my dad, from what I understand, my dad had some options.
See, the
Was
first
looking at
one, was
options.
the first one to go?
Yes, He was, my dad was. I'm not directly sure how far. I know that he had other HBCU choices, but he just as soon as he got out of Vietnam, he found he wanted to go into business. And business, SBI was one of the best schools for business at that time. And there's a funny story about my dad and SBI. My dad just came from Vietnam, thought he was, all that in a bag of chips.
Now you're saying SBI.
I'm sorry, School of Business.
Okay.
School of Business and Industry. That's at Florida A&M. They call it SBI for short.
Okay.
So my dad thought he was all that in a bag of chips, and Dr. Mobley told him to wear a suit to one of his classes. And he was like, he wasn't doing it. So she kept warning him, we'll wear a suit to this class, and he'd do it. So she actually made him sit out a semester and decide where he wanted to be in life and if he was really serious about this program. And when my dad sat out a semester, he realized she was not playing. And ever since then, my dad was serious about SBI. So, but the program is second to none. A lot of great people come out of the School of Business and Industry program at FAMU. And so he told Shamika about it because Shamika wanted to be an accountant. He was a CPA. My dad was a CPA. He worked with, gosh, what's the name of the company in Chicago?
Yeah,
He did. And also, it
I was gonna
was,
say with the state, he was like a state
yeah,
for
but
a
he
period of
worked with,
time.
yeah, but he worked with I forgot the name of the company in Chicago. And then he came back to Jersey and was doing tax fraud for elderly people. Tracking down people who are doing fraud against elderly people. And that's when he finally settled in New Jersey, and then he moved down to Tallahassee to be with me and my daughter at the time. So, and then he told Tramika about it, and then while I was there, she came on down, and we were like, "Yeah, you gotta come to FAMU. I'm here." So you're not gonna be by yourself.
Right.
So.
Okay. So let's talk about influence and legacy. You describe your grandmother, Hester, as fearless, bold, demanding with high expectations. So in what ways did her service in the 6AAA influence your career drive and focus? Have any thoughts about that?
Well, because I didn't know how important her being a 6AAA was, I just know that either serving your country or going to school to contribute to the world in some kind of way. So with my dad being in Vietnam, and then I believe also my dad was a Black Panther when he was in school, it was either being an activist about something positive, going to school for education, or going into the military. I knew I was intended for going to the military. I would just it just would not work. And so, and I told them that I was not going to go to the military. I was going to college, and they were like, well, "Okay." So, but her influence, it was just about either be something, do something. You're going to be the military. You're going to go to college, but you're going to do something. You're not going to waste your life and not do anything. So I would say from my, that's from my perspective, my grandmother, that you have to do something with your life, and it has to you got to choose one. And I knew I was not doing the military. I just know I wasn't cut out for it.
Yeah, and she, for me, my grandmother was tough, and she was tough on me. I felt, real like, and I when I say, when you were saying about everybody else, I mean, it was almost like, and it's probably because she had seen so many things in the world, and just from her eyes, being born in 1919, right? I mean, the things that she had seen, I even think about it now. I've been Kyra and I both have been single mothers for a period of time. Just the resolve and the resilience that you learn from that, and the things that you have with that. So you put that in with her being in 6AAA as well. Like, her standards were high. She had high standards, like high expectations, and there was no room for error. And if there was, she was gonna call you out. It was gonna be known. I had a little flip mouth, I know. So, and I like to be a little slick, be funny. And like, once again, I'm a lyricist, right? So when she would say something, I would have something nice and clever and creative to say back, or, I wanted to know why I was that kid. And, she
You wouldn't
I
have any
spent
of
a lot
that.
of time. She wasn't having none of it. And I spent a lot of time inside looking through the window at Kyra and my brother playing outside and, you know, spending time inside trying to figure it out. So so I think that she taught us in so many ways. And I know for me, you know, it's a time and a place for everything. You're going to respect authority. You're going to education is important. You need to be able to talk to people appropriately. She took us into the banks, like, so we would go with her to the bank and we could see her doing business. You know, she brought us into places whenever she was a seamstress and that thing, like, we traveled with her and we got to see her interacting with people. So it was about order. It was about having class, having grace, being respectful. Like, all of those things were, she had no tolerance for anything, for you falling out of line with that. So little did I know, we were all on her line, right? We were her little soldiers. She had no place for it.
Well, I want to tell a funny story about her, about being in line. So my grandmother, when she got older, she was religious watching TV. Everything on TV was just her world, okay? First of all, she was, they knew her by name when she called that QVC place. Okay, they knew her by name. I was like, Grandma, this is ridiculous. When you pick up the phone, they know you by name. That means you need to stop buying stuff. But no, the funny thing is, back in the day, there was a situation with Amy Fisher up in New Jersey about something that she did. And so the whole Amy Fisher story, and then Amy Fisher had a pager, and that's how she was able to contact the guy, whatever. So because I'm in a lot of activities, I'm a sorority, I'm doing a lot of stuff in home, I got a pager so that people can reach me. So when I told my grandmother, she flipped like, oh my gosh, according to you have a pager, you're selling drugs. And I was like, no, I'm not, Grandma, I'm not selling drugs. She's like, yes, you are. Because on the TV, it said, if you have a pager, you're selling drugs. And I'm like, oh my God, no, Grandma, I'm not selling drugs. She said, you need to get rid of that. So she, well, I'm telling you, she, her perspective on things, I mean, she was like mad because I had a pager. Like I said, Grandma, I am not selling drugs. But that was her connection. You have a pager. All she knows, young girls have pages, and when Amy Fisher was doing that pager, you don't need a pager. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, so I thought that was funny because she was I got a pager. I'm like, no, Grandma. I just need for people to contact me. And then she thought she was fine when she got her cordless phone. I was like, oh Lord. She's like, yeah, I'm with the technology. She had a cordless phone. So yeah, she thought she was doing something walking around with her cordless phone. I think I took a picture of it because that's what she thought. Because she just thought she was doing something, having a cordless phone. So anyway, I just thought that might be something funny to mention. But yeah.
I was that, the grandparents, they would have been dangerous with email and text messages.
Oh my God.
As much as they'd like to communicate, it's like, oh my God, I'm glad they didn't have it back in the day.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I remember that. Kyra, you remember whenever she got that little, the little thing, if you're falling and you can't get up. She's like, we like, Grandma, you need this out. And she'll say, I can go wherever I'm going to go because I got this little thing here and I can push this button and I can do all of this. So, you know, she thought she could do anything as long as she was fine,
My mother used to give hers in the other part of the house. That wasn't very helpful.
That wasn't helpful at all.
So. But now, so Kyra, you've talked about your father and I understand, Tamika, your father's quite an adventurer.
Yes. Let's try to listen. I know your podcast will get to wherever he is down in these islands. But yes, yeah, so he got his degree at Howard in public administration and he has an MBA as well. So he did a lot of things in the hospital administration time, went into P&G when they had a diversity move back in the 70s to get African-Americans into Procter & Gamble. So he kind of started there, moved through a lot of regional hospitals and did well for himself and retired early out of FedEx in Memphis. And since then, he has just been enjoying his life. He's been going where the fish are. He is the only living sibling. A number of his cousins have passed away too. And let me tell you, this man is living like me and Kyra would want to. He's knocking coconuts off the tree and has been going from island to island. He started off in Costa Rica since like 2014. I thought he was just going on a vacation. And this time he loved to travel. So this time, but usually I would pay his bills and do things like that. And a couple months went by and I didn't have to go pay a bill. And so I inquired, I'm like, Dad, like we talking through WhatsApp, like what's going on? Where you at? And he's like, oh, I'm not come back. I said, well, where's all your stuff? Oh, I got rid of all that. What? The storage? I need to pay the storage? No, I got rid of all that. I'm like, so when you going to come back? Well, maybe next year. Well, next year was in 2015, and we almost, 10 years from there. And so he's been in Costa Rica during COVID. He was in Panama. And so right now he's somewhere along up in Central America. He speaks fluent Spanish, and he's just enjoying his life. Once again, he's worked hard, was raised well, educated, set us all on track, and he's just enjoying his life. And he's great with his hands, too. So the mechanical part that Kyra was saying, it's kind of funny how they reverse like that, because my dad is known for being able to take a whole car apart and then put it back together and it runs. Like my uncles on my mom's side of the family, that's what they loved. Like my dad could just do it, and he would just, get his beer and do it, take the car, take the engine completely apart, put it back together, and it runs, And so that was something that he loved. So he's a mechanic, carpenter, good with his hands. So I think too, like we have the education, but we always have a good trade on the side that, that I hear that we've had there too. So he's able to do things with his hands. So he really can function anywhere, but he is enjoying paradise called Central America.
All right. Well, sounds wonderful.
We got to go catch up with him. That's what I have to say. Me and my brother going to do a pop up on him,
So let's get back to your grandmother for a second. How old was she? She passed.
Grandma passed in 93. So let me see. 96.
Yeah, because she met Nia when Nia was a baby.
So she was in her mid-80s?
Yep, about 87.
No, 77.
Yeah, because she was born in 1919, and she passed in 96.
Yeah, because she met Nia.
Right, yeah.
77.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So is she buried in a veteran cemetery or a family cemetery?
She's buried on top of her brother.
Mm-hmm. Howard. Yeah.
And that's the military cemetery.
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Dad is in. He wanted to be. The only way I can get my dad's wishes was because there's only two caskets can only be on top of each other. So have my dad cremated, and my dad is at the head of his mother's grave at the military.
Okay. In Georgia?
In Urn, yes.
In New Jersey. New Jersey.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have any reflections you want to share on what your grandmother's life and legacy mean to you and your family?
Yeah, I think for me, she just represents unconditional love, fearlessness, and perseverance, and excellence. Yeah.
For me, I know that she worked real hard to pay off her house. Back then, I didn't really know the importance of a person paying off their house. But my grandmother did it through some family situations that the house was lost. But she persevered. She was a businesswoman. She knew how to have. She was a true entrepreneur before entrepreneur became a word. Okay. Yeah. So she had her side hustles to feed her family, regardless if a man was there. And honestly, she showed it's nice to be married or whatever, but you don't need a man to her
that part.
To do what you need to do to accomplish what you need to do for your family. So she was definitely strong about that because she had to raise three boys by herself, and raising three boys, so I can't even understand. My dad's like 6'1". He's very tall. And so, and then your dad's kind of tall too.
Yeah.
But I can imagine trying to clothe and put shoes on and instill in three boys. So there is definitely self-worth, all kinds of educational push behind her children to do better than her and to do better for themselves. And so that's what I, when I think of my grandmother, I look at all of my uncle, my dad, her. I mean, education was all of that. And the fact that she did it on her own.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And you're not thinking about it, and then feeding, clothing, then they all went to college and they all graduated. That's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes people today talk about how things are so hard. I mean, people say nobody knows the trials that some of the prior generations had. So,
yeah, the hardships is just now we hear, you know, now we kind of hear the stories and you put those things together and it just gives you more empathy and understanding for her, you know.
And respect.
Much respect. Oh, listen, she was not going to take any disrespect, so we had to respect her. But now it's like, we understand. You know, this, I mean, and she's known now. She's known through the whole family. Like, she tough. Don't play with Hess. Like, you know, all her nieces and nephews, they know to straighten up and fly right, like Tuskegee Airmen. Like, they, you know, don't come over there with no stuff. She ain't having none of that. You know, so I think that she represented a pillar and a source of pride, and for, you know, even beyond her own children and grandchildren.
And what we didn't mention is she also loved her church. She loved God.
Oh gosh, how did we miss Bethany, Missionary Baptist Church?
I was just thinking about it.
Oh Lord, right. she would knock us upside the head.
Right, that's what I was thinking. I know we met. I said, yeah, she believed in God. She loved Jesus. Yes, and so she gave her life to Christ and everything. Big
and
time.
She was on the usher board, and she made the missionary hats.
Mm-hmm.
And also she would brag about the meetups that she would have with these women. And I remember seeing the pictures. I actually have one of the pictures. Cause Kyra, I realized when I was kept talking about the picture, I actually have the picture. I don't know if y'all can see. Here's the picture of her with the 6 AAA. I didn't, you know, at the time she had a lot of these pictures around her in like an album. But she would do the 6 AAA meetups. Like, I didn't know what this group was that she was doing. I didn't know of her being like in a sorority or something like that.
Was that the Black Women's Military group? Perhaps?
I believe so. And yeah, so that's her sitting on there. Kyra, you see she's on the floor. I don't know if it's showing up to you. Yeah, she's on the left or on the right?
Yeah,
on the left. Far left on the front. And yep. So she would have these pictures where she would go to those different meetups. They would go to different places. So she was still affiliated with them. I didn't realize that until now that it was part, you know, it was a military group. But yeah, yeah. And she was a nurse. So she took care of people. She loved the Lord. And she was serious about her family being of distinction and making a mark in this world and not going out here embarrassing her at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was a significant honor. It is a significant honor to receive a Congressional Gold Medal. What was the reaction that you had and your family members had when you found out?
So, listen, we're still finding out.
For real. Yeah.
That part. Because let's talk about how we got here, Doc. I just happened to... you know, I work at USAA, right? Military. So I'm supporting military families. And there was a preview of the documentary about 6 AAA. So I just, as part of the diversity initiative, I always tune in and happen to go in there. And I happen to mention, hey, I'm a descendant. That's my grandmother. And that's when I found out about the statue, that she finally got the Congressional Award and got kind of linked in with everything that was here. Didn't know about it, you know, and it's like almost 900 women. And I think it's like 9 of them that are still living. Like those women did it's just, you know, the stories that we did and the monumental things that we did to move things forward. It was just like, this is like the military hidden figures for me, right? And so many of them they meant so much, but to them, you know, they were just serving. they, you know, that's why they're able to be so humble about it. Like, it was just in them to serve and to do that. So I think even now with that, she would just be, you know, say thank you and would take the honor of it. But truly, she'll just be like, you know, I did what I was supposed to do. I did my job, you know. So for us, it's amazing because, and I know Kyra and I really want to make sure our cousin Givens that he's been awarded as far as being a Tuskegee Airman there. And for Kyra and I, you know, Uncle Howard and our grandmother needs to have the same. And so I think that's something that we're going to be talking about more and being able to really share that. All of my kids know about her, you know, all of our grandkids, we know about that now, what we've learned, but you know, her story needs to be told and the recognition needs to be there for her. And so we're honored. I mean, it's wonderful for the country and the world to recognize her and what she did, and whatever we can do to continue to support you know, this effort just in general for 6888, but specifically for her, we're committing to do it. Right, Kyra?
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Definitely agree.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that the podcast is one vehicle so we can get a lot of these stories out, because there are a lot of wonderful stories to be told.
Yes.
And you know, and the 6888 is not the only group. I recently,
yes,
because of the podcast, I had an opportunity recently to meet a descendant of a group that I'd never heard of called the Montford Point Marines, another Black World War II group. They received a Congressional Gold Medal in 2012 when President Obama was in office. They've never had a documentary, never had a movie. There were about 10,000 of them.
Wow.
And it's like, well, we never heard of them. And the hidden figures.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they are.
These stories need to be told. Our young people need to know who these heroes are and how our mothers, grandmothers, these fathers, grandfathers, how they form the foundation for what we are and the successes that we're able to have. I'm gonna be interviewing them next season, by the way. So
that's perfect. So we thank you, Doc, for this platform and for all of the work that you're doing to get these stories out there, to get us to talk about it, to start the conversations, to you know, with each one of your podcasts, you're giving us an opportunity to honor them, speak their names, and allow us to talk as a family in getting ready to get here, right, to talk to you. So it just stirs the gift that they already stirred in us. So, you know, we thank you for this platform and for the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I had a couple more questions as we wrap up today. What do you think about Hester's decision to serve the country, given the level of racism at the time?
Mm.
Well, of course.
Well, I would say that she was not afraid. She was, you know, because think about it, she came from was born in Cusper, Georgia, a very small town. Then you go to, she gets to Linden, Jersey. It's not like, it's not a small town, but it's not out of the country. And you know, so for her to say, okay, I'm signing up, okay, I'm getting ready to fly out of the country, she had to be fearless. There was no fear in her to do it, you know, because we're here. She met our grandfather out of the country. Most people are like, oh, I don't know about that, or getting on a plane. You know, I don't know if that was maybe her first plane ride, you know. I know she came by train.
Yeah, but, well, she didn't fly.
But she had to get over there.
They went on the ship, yeah.
They went on the ship, okay. So they took the ship over there. Okay.
Yeah. Well, either ship, plane, whatever, I know that she was not afraid to take a chance and just do what the military is telling her to do and go out there and do it. I mean, for back in that time, you know, there was no way of knowing anything about, you know, the other world or countries and things like that. And so she was basically going into the unknown. And to me, it was bravery. That's what it says to me.
Yes.
She was very brave to go into the military and then to sign up for something where she knew she was leaving her comfort zone to do a job.
And if you think about it, it was a pretty treacherous trip to take a boat all the way across the Atlantic, those rough waters, and then they had the German shooting at their boats when they were closer to Scotland. So it was quite an adventure for them.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing to kind of bring it back a little bit, because you know, we have these stories with her, but her like maternal great grandmother, we had the story of her. She was one of the last slaves to come across. And she came across, she actually knew English, right? And so this is the story. Like, this is the storytelling that happened, that she knew English. She was a woman of distinction in Africa. So I don't know if that meant that she was, you know, a part of a tribe, a chief, or, but she knew, and her children both were heading to go get some fabric or something like that. So they, you know, they convinced her to come. They said, hey, we have some over here. And that's how her and her two children got pulled into the slave trade, came across. She listened for where her children were supposed to be, where her children were sold off. She was sold off. She apparently did not spend too much time on a plantation. She took up with the Native Americans that were there, and they went and got her kids. And they're like named after flowers and all these things there. And, you know, she got her kids, and they went on, and, you know, now here we are. So my grandmother knew those stories.
Was this in South Georgia also?
It was. Sure enough was. Her name, yep, Narcissa Ellis. Narcissa.
Do you know what Black Seminole?
I believe so.
We have to talk about this. My great-grandmother was a Black Seminole from South Georgia.
Yeah. 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 So right, it was right between Florida and Georgia. We haven't been able to pinpoint exactly where she was, and the census kind of breaks there for us to be able to keep the tracks. But she took up there, and they helped her get her kids back, and that's how we were preserved right through there. So my grandmother, and these were like the stories that they had. So my grandmother, I like the fact that she was a woman, the fact that she was Black, I don't think mattered to her. I think that was something that she realized was a stereotype the world was trying to put on her. And she was just trying to make sure that people saw her for who she was, no matter how small pint somebody may think that she was. You know, she had a point to prove, and she did it.
Yeah. Our great grandmother was an identical twin as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. The littler of the two. Yeah. Yep. So
yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say that I think that it definitely, to take absolutely nothing from the time, there was definitely a lot of things with colorism and things that's there that, you know, we saw that, you know, that kind of ricocheted kind of through our family a bit too. And so I know she was definitely impacted by that. But I think that she didn't let it get in the way of her showing and proving who she was, and not letting somebody define who she was.
Given the way the country is today, you think she'd make the same decision to enlist?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I think that she probably would be trying to fuss at me and Kyra for us not doing it.
Uh-huh. I remember this discussion because I said, no, Grandma, I'm just not meant for military. And it was a kind of back and forth. I said, no, I'm going in engineering. That's where, you know, where my heart is. But I remember discussion. She was asking me about it, considering the military. I'm like, I'm not built for the military. I thank God for the military and people who are in it to defend us. But I just don't think that's just not where my heart was. My heart was in engineering,
right?
And become
and that's a good thing, because look at the things you've invented that are very helpful for people,
mm-hmm.
Right? You know,
and for the military,
absolutely,
right. For the, yeah, military.
And you know, I originally wanted to go in aerospace engineering, and it wasn't kind of the cool thing to talk to friends about wanting to be an engineer. And then I was, when Hidden Figures came out, I literally cried through the whole movie, because at the time when I was in high school in Florida, my mom reached out to someone at NASA for pictures from the Halley's Comet. And I didn't even know that year after that is when Katherine Johnson had retired. If I had known there was a person like her, I wouldn't have felt so alone in trying to figure out, can a Black woman succeed in mathematics, and, you know, is it possible? So I'm glad they're telling stories like this, because, you know, Katherine Johnson was the reason why we have, you know, first couple of things in space, because of her calculation. And at the time, I'm in high school thinking, okay, this is not the necessary cool thing people talk about to be when you grow up. But had I known, I would have felt better about my choices going to engineering. So, you know, hearing more and more people like Tyler Perry, whoever, tell stories about Black women and the contribution of Black women and Black men is going to inspire the children after us to know that they can do it, no matter what, whether it's military or anything else. I just appreciate them looking back now and telling our story, because they're not going to do it for us in the high schools.
Right. And if you live in Florida, well, you know what's going on in Florida right now with the AP
course. You can't even have an EPA course.
Yeah, it's terrible. So my one final question is, what lessons from Hester's life story can you share to inspire young African-Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves?
I'll go first, Tariqa. Mm-hmm. I would say just have bravery and trust in God. Because to me, to enlist in the military and to travel into a foreign country where you have no idea what you get into, you have to have bravery and you have to have faith. And she had to have trust in the Lord to whatever this path is leading her to do it. And here she met her husband, and now she has a legacy of children. So by her trusting her path, or trusting the Lord to guide her path, led her to being honored and to meeting her husband and to creating the legacy that we're here and we're creating our legacy with our children. That's what I would say, that for anyone, have faith, trust in God, and let him lead your path.
That's gonna be hard. Yeah, that's gonna be hard to top that one, Tremaine.
Listen, that's why she the older cousin, the wiser one. Listen, I'm not even gonna try with that. I think the only thing that I would add to everything that Kyra just said is, you know, be in the moment and trust yourself. And really, if you can stay calm in a situation, you can get to the next step, because everything in her life, it was no crystal stair, was no silver spoon, there was no handouts, none of that. So her ability to be able to experience the traumas, the challenge, the things that came up against her, and still be able to take that next brave step, I think that for everybody, just be in the moment of where you are and look for that opportunity for the next step. And with God, you going to know what the next step is, because everything you got in you, like how she would tell us, you know, what you got inside of you, can't nobody take it away. What you have inside of you prepares you for your next step. So instead of looking at all the things that you feel are coming up against you and the fears and the things that are there, know and trust that what you got inside of you and God who's looking out for you, you got that next step. You just have to be brave enough to take it. Yeah.
Nothing. Amen.
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 Amen. And for Bethlehem Missionary Baptist Church, which all of our family members were the founders of, you know, pass the collection place and make your offering.
It's Bethlehem Missionary Baptist Church.
Bethlehem Missionary Baptist Church in Roselle, New Jersey. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Roselle. All right. Well, Tremaine and Kyra, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and for sharing your family story. I am so grateful.
Yes, yeah. Thank you so much for having us here.
Yes, it's been an honor.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show tonight. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I will share a quote from Confucius about excellence. The will to win, the desire to succeed, the urge to reach your full potential, These are the keys that will unlock the door to personal excellence. To this reflection, I reiterate a closing comment from Hester Givens Massey's granddaughter. Have bravery and faith. What you have inside you prepares you for the next step. See you for our next show on Wednesday, February the 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.